Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome, welcome to everyone. It is a sunny day in Chicago, and I am so happy to have my guest today. You're really going to enjoy this inspirational show. It is my friend who is Andre Slay, and he has a very inspirational story to tell you today. But once again, my name is Casey Grant, and I am host of the Fly Girl Show. And we air every Wednesday from 11 to 12 Central Standard Time. And I hope that you will enjoy me. And next week, come back and enjoy one of our shows. Or you can call in, go on the internet and listen to the show anytime you want on Blog Talk Radio. So let's get going with this interesting show, because I tell you, you are going to fall in love with this story, with this man. And for any of you who have a bad day, you will always reflect on his story and say, there's no way I could have a bad day. So good morning, Andre.
Good morning. How you doing, Casey? Thanks for having me.
Oh, I am so pleased to have you. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show. Now, what I didn't tell everybody, since I told them it was a great inspirational show, but I didn't tell them what it was about, you are a marathon runner. You ran in the Boston Marathon in 2014, but that's not the whole story. That's not the challenge. Tell my audience about you. You're from Arkansas, right? Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right, I am. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas. I was born and raised in Little Rock. I was born in 1981, but I don't know if people can recall in 1992, it was a big gang war in Little Rock, and they did a documentary on HBO about it, like gangbanging in Little Rock. It was, I think at the time, Arkansas was number one on the murder rate as far as the United States, so I stayed in that area, in that vicinity, where all that was going on. So, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of half and half, a lot of poverty and, you know, people either, you know, going to jail or, you know, the success rate was really, really difficult because it was so much you had to deal with at home. But, you know, I had a really good, you know, came from a really good home. My mom, single parent, but, you know, she worked several jobs. And I think when I was six, from what she says, I started talking about airplanes since I was four. And then when I was 6 years old, when I was 12, she took me for my first flying lesson, going to the airport, and you get this hour introductory flight, and she did that three times in my life just to keep me motivated because she thought she had something when I said something about airplanes. And, you know, later on in the story, you'll see why that, you know, why I spoke about the airplane part. But, you know, growing up and eventually I went to college, and I wasn't a trouble kid, but, you know, I got in a little trouble like most kids. And, you know, the day of graduation of high school, I didn't get my diploma. I actually got it maybe a few months later after that. So I walked, but I didn't have my diploma. I quickly left the graduation area. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that about me. And so my mother kind of gave me this real speech. She was like, look, if you want to, you have one more, I'm going to pay for you one semester at the 2-year college. You need to figure out what you're going to do. If you go and flunk out, you're on your own. And at the time I was working at Sam's Club. I'll never forget being a cart, you know, getting the carts from the parking lot. And I remember they just put new pavement down, and it was hot anyway, but then you're on that new tar. And it's so hot. Yes. I was like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. So, and how can I transfer?
I think, I think that's one of the lessons that we learn. You know, you when your parents teach you, you go out and you get a job, and then you realize how hard you were working, and you realize at that point you don't want to work hard, you want to work smart.
Right. And so, but you don't know about working smart when you're young. You just work, right? So, you know, I was like, man, I can't do this the rest of my life. How can I figure this out? And so, I, you know, go from barely, you know, from not getting my diploma to coming out that semester with 3.2. Then I transferred down to a college called Henderson State. And when that was in Arkadelphia, it's maybe an hour south of Little Rock, and I pursued aviation. And during the meantime of me doing aviation, my grandmother got sick, and so I moved back to Little Rock. She had Parkinson's, and I helped take care of her. So in the meantime, you know, I transferred to college there in Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, which is based out of Daytona Beach, but they had a satellite campus in Little Rock. And so I, you know, went to school there, and, you know, I was working full-time. So I was like, you know, I saw these motorcycles. I was like, man, I think I want a motorcycle. So I bought a motorcycle, and I was going to and from, you know, taking care of my grandmother, going to work, going to school. And in 2006, I was in a bad motorcycle accident. And that motorcycle accident, you know, I'll never forget, because I never lost consciousness. I got hit by another motorcycle. And when I was done rolling on the ground, I looked at my foot, and my foot was completely shredded. And it was, you know, everything was intact, but it was, the skin was just pretty much filleted off me. And I didn't know what to think. I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And I was bleeding I was in a lot of pain. I think some of the adrenaline kicked in. So based on what I saw compared to the pain, it wasn't that much. I mean, from what I saw, I thought I should have been hurting a lot more. So I kind of knew it was adrenaline kind of in there as well. So it was so much traffic buildup that there was an ambulance that was happening to go by our scene, and they pulled over for me. And later on, I find out that they were going to get someone else, but my wreck looked a lot worse than who they were picking up. And I think that kind of saved my life, because I was bleeding really bad. I wasn't losing consciousness, but I thought it was the end. And, you know, on the way to the hospital, I asked the nurse, I said, you know, can they just sew this up, or, you know, how does it work? And the nurse was like, to be honest, this is the worst trauma I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, no. And when I got to the hospital, and so we had I had to have emergency surgery, and the next morning the doctor came in and said, you know, we looked at all our options. You have a lot of things torn. You have three main veins that go to your leg. You've severed two. So every day you keep your leg, you have to have a blood transfusion. That's how much blood you're losing. And the only resort we can do is amputation. And I didn't want to believe him. I was like, what? You know, no, you know, I'm flying planes. I have a future. You know, and at that time I was flying planes. I was upon getting my pilot's license, maybe a few weeks from taking the test. And I was like, no, it's no way this could happen to me. And the doctor was like, well, this is the only resort we have. So I waited out, and a lot of people were coming by, and they were saying, you know, I have a doctor that can come look, and a doctor, but none of these doctors showed up. And I prayed, and nothing really happened. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. I asked my mom. My mom even was like, and I depend on my mom. You know, me and my mom were really close. And my mom was like, I really don't know what to tell you. And, you know, I had to go from a kid to a man in a matter of days to make this decision, because they can't amputate unless you give them the okay. And
well, let me ask a question for clarification. He said that if they did not remove your leg, you would need a blood transfusion every day?
No. Yeah, if Yeah, because what I didn't see was the bottom of my foot where the heel is was completely split open, and the veins that went into that area were severed. So I was pumping out blood every day. So while I was there and while I was not being very open about, while I was not allowing, telling the doctor, giving him an answer, I would have to have a blood transfusion every other day. Like, they would have to hook blood to me because I was losing blood every day. And, right, so this happened on a Saturday, so the following Wednesday, I finally made the decision. I said, hey, can I get two more days with my foot, and then I'll go ahead and go with it, because, you know, the doctor says every day that I sit there, you know, I risk infection. And so if I would have gotten gangrene, you know, it could have went up, it could have spread up to, because right at that point they were talking about amputating where a little bit below the calf muscle. And if it could have spread, it could have been way above the knee or even kill me. So, you know, time was of the essence and time was very important, but I just, you know, I've never been in this situation. Nobody was there to kind of help me through this. So, you know, but I didn't want to keep it and end up something really bad happening. So I made the decision, and that next Saturday they amputated. And forever my life was changed.
Yes, I can imagine.
Right. And so the 2 days, maybe 3 days after the amputation, they sent me home. And I was an athlete prior, so I was in good physical shape. So, but I'll never forget the first night I went home, and I woke up in the middle of the night to use the restroom and completely forgot I was an amputee. So I stepped on my left leg as normal, and when I went to take the step on the right, there was no foot there. I fell flat on my face. And
now they amputated above, just below the knee.
No, way below the knee, like pretty much above the ankle.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm almost 6'2", so I have a lot of legs still, you know. So I pretty much have 3/4 of my leg. So,
okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, at that time I fell, you know, tears are coming down my eyes, you know, why me, you know, and. But at that point, I figured, you know, I had to man up, and I had to figure out what was going to, you know, what's going to be my future like at this point. It's funny. I haven't told this story in a while, so I'm kind of reliving everything again. It's kind of crazy.
Okay.
So
yeah.
A friend of mine called me. A friend of mine I used to date called me, and she said, hey, I heard about your wreck. I was looking on the internet and I found a website with these 3 or 4 pilots, and they're all amputees. So it sounds like you can still possibly get your career back. I don't know the process, but these guys are pilots for airlines. So why couldn't that be you? And
yeah.
You know, I was very down, you know, at the time, you know, and that just sprang life into me. So I contacted these pilots, and they ran me through the whole deal to get my license back and go in front of the FAA to demonstrate. So my accident was in April 15th, and let's see, 3 months from that point, like I think July 15th, I was taking my first steps. Somewhere in late July, I was taking my first steps to walk. And against my mother's will, I was back on my motorcycle in August. And
no, you did not. You did not get back on that motorcycle.
I did. I didn't want to. I'm one of those type of people, I don't like to sit in fear. And I just wanted to face it. And so I needed that. And I rode again, and I was completely fine. Now, I don't ride like I used to. I sold the bikes, but I just wanted to be able to not let myself fear that. I stare fear in the eye. I don't like to sit in fear in anything, and that's why I had to do it. In September of that year, of 2006, I was with an FAA examiner taking my flight test, it's called a SOTA, which is Statement of Demonstrated Ability. That's what I received. So I flew, I had complete control of the airplane, and I'm now, as far as one of the few pilots that hold a commercial license while being an amputee, definitely one of the fewer African-Americans doing that, because there's not that many African-American pilots to begin with, let alone an amputee pilot. And so I eventually got my commercial license. I was sponsored by a group called the Arkansas Rehabilitation Services, because if you don't know about flying, it's very expensive if you don't go military. And obviously, yeah, I couldn't go military with the amputation. And it's close to $80,000 to $100,000. And this company helped me get through all my flight stuff, and now I'm debt-free while being a pilot. So I'm definitely blessed to still have my career, to have my life, you know, to pretty much in my own eyes be 100% and have no issues. So,
well, let me ask a few questions here. I'm sure the audience,
yeah,
is thinking some of the things that I'm thinking. Okay, so as we know, definitely the movement would be better and easier because you have both joints. You had your hip, you had your knee. So at this point now, I would think that the rehab would have been easier rehab. Is that correct or not?
Well, rehab's never easy because you're walking on an artificial device. And
Okay. You're
getting used to not having feeling at your ankles. So mentally,
okay,
it can be challenging. But you learn over time to adapt. The human body always adapts. So you learn to feel the pressure of things in your knee. Then, you know, that pretty much replaces the ankle. So that's the next big spot where you feel everything. So I'm a below knee amputee. So below knee amputees have an easier time than above knee amputees. Because if you're above knee, the knee controls everything. It controls your movement, you know, your walk, your bending your leg. So without that, you know, you need to have some type of help. And so if you're an above knee amputee, the people that are above knee amputees, the knee is a computer, because you need the knee to walk. And so
Exactly. That's
why if you have a difference between being a below knee and a above knee, my prosthetics, which is still expensive, cost around $15,000. That does sound expensive, but check this out. If you're an above knee amputee and you have a top of the line computer in your knee that senses steps, that senses when you're not off the weight anymore to bend, those legs get up to $120,000. And that's just one. So if you're a double amputee, that's double that.
And does the insurance cover that, or does a lot of this have to be out of your own pocket?
Insurances do cover some of those legs, but there are caps. Like, and
yeah,
it's really unfortunate. So there are some insurance agencies that say, you don't need that. That's way too much for you, so we're not going to cover
that.
So they'll cover certain stuff, but if you're doing too much, they're not going to cover it. Like, they won't cover running legs. They say, you don't need that. That's optional. So they're not going to cover running legs, but they'll cover walking legs.
Well, I could understand that, because at that point, it gives you your ability to function, and they're at the baseline of being able to, you know, take care of yourself. So I could understand that being a cap, but I know that that goes against the grain of a person who wants to do the things that they did.
People need to be active. You know, we already are talking about how America is not as healthy as it used to be. And so that difference in walking or running can be the difference in someone burning calories to not be overweight, to not have a heart attack later, you know, or to not be depressed because they're just sitting at home. And so that's
exactly
the part that's unfortunate. And we're actually trying to figure out a way to fight for that, to make at least them, because they're starting to make hybrid prosthetics where the leg is not a complete running leg, but it has the ability to take that type of pressure. And so we're trying to get insurance to at least okay that, where a leg where they can still kind of jog on, or if they see danger, they can kind of run out the way, you know, different things like that. So, because you need that leg is a necessity to someone's livelihood, and they need, you know, you need all the options you're going to get. So, but
now, how do you feel now? Because this happened when you were how old, and tell us how old you are now, and then tell me mentally how you function, because now it's a part of you. So,
right. I was 24 turning 25, and I want to just bring a story into that to bring you are where I am right now. And so, all right, so in the meantime of flight school, I saw in the paper that they were hiring at Delta Airlines at the airport. So I applied, and I became a ticket agent while in flight school, just to know the aviation industry. So while working there, there's freaking flyers that fly out of there, and they call them medallions because they fly so much a year, and they actually are only like 10% of the customers, but they make 75% of revenue. So that's why they get so much. That's why they're distinguished, because they fly so much, more than just the person that's flying, you know, for vacation. So in Little Rock's so small, it's only so many of us. You get to know these medallions. You see them. They know you by name. You know them by name. And one of these medallions approached me. Well, I saw him travel before, and we spoke. He's an amputee. But he was in a wheelchair, and I didn't get it. And so I was like, do you need any help? And he didn't need any help. He looked in great shape. Well, he said, hey, here's my card if you think about playing wheelchair basketball. But I never contacted him because I wasn't even secure with my own self, let alone being in a wheelchair. You know, I'm walking and proud to walk. I didn't want to do anything sitting down. So
exactly.
One day, so I thought he was paralyzed, and I didn't know why. What's the point in having a prosthetic while being in a wheelchair? But one day I saw him walking, and come to find out he played wheelchair basketball on his own, but he walks, and he does Ironman. And I don't know if you're familiar with an Ironman, but it's a triathlon event. It's your top-of-the-line event where you're swimming for almost 3 miles. You're biking on a bicycle or a cycle for 112 miles, and you're running 26.2 miles in the same event. And he's done 20 of them. This man is amazing. And so he tried to run the Boston Marathon.
Excuse me.
Yes.
So he has, where is his amputation? How far
same
up
same as
his
mine.
Okay.
Just like mine. Right foot, you know, around over, you know, around a little bit below his, where his calf muscle would be.
Okay.
And his name is Jeffrey Glassbrenner. So he's done over 20 Ironman, full Ironman. And so he contacts me because I remember when I saw on TV about the Boston Marathon, and he's the only person I knew that ran that type of distance. And I said, did you run the Boston Marathon? Text him. Are you okay? And so I didn't hear from him. But later on he said, I did run it, but I didn't finish because of the bombing. I'm safe. And so a month later he contacted me and he said, you know, I want to go back. I'm a type of person that loves to finish what I started, and I didn't want these bad guys to take the medal from me. I'm going to go back and finish. I would love for you to run with me. And I said, what? How would I can't afford that. What are you talking about? He's like, well, you look in great shape. He's like, well, I was in decent shape. I was really overweight at that point. I was 230 pounds from the 155 pounds I was when I was amputated. So I was a pretty thick guy at that point. And he said, I'll help you. And he helped and contacted the right sources. And I was eventually donated a running leg. And I don't know if you're not sure about running legs, but running legs are $20,000. They just don't give those away. And
we don't. No, I have no concept, no idea, no range of anything. So it costs $20,000.
Correct. Yeah, it costs up to $20,000. And I trained for my first marathon. I went vegetarian the same year to lose the weight. And I qualified for Boston because you have to run a marathon and qualify for it, and then they have to let you in. That's why Boston is so significant, because the majority of the runners qualify. Like, they have to have the time at a certain time due to their age or whatever. So I'm one of the few amputees that can run that distance and have completed the Boston Marathon as well. So I
now,
tried to
I
run
didn't
a marathon.
Know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's like
that's
the Super
good,
Bowl of marathon.
System. I did not know. So for my audience, that's a good point. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so, yeah, you can pay in and go to, like, New York. You know, New York's a lottery, so you put your name in and you're picked, you know, randomly. But that's anybody can be chosen to run New York. Anyone can't be chosen to run Boston. You have to be bad.
Okay.
And, right. And so I did 3 marathons of 26.2 miles, and then I got into sprinting. And I don't know, I forgot to say Delta got involved, and they sponsored my whole trip to Boston. And, you know, I represented them while running, so it was an amazing trip. And now I'm currently a sprinter. I've lost the weight, and I'm running the 400-meter and long jump and preparing for Olympic trials in June of this year for Brazil for summer Olympics.
For the Olympics? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Now, how was, give us, let's go back a little. How was that first marathon? So you trained with it. Now, when you get a, so they loaned you, or, right, they loaned
you
the app. He gave it to you. So now then they have to adjust it and fit it to you and everything else.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how was your training? Tell us a little bit about the training and how you felt at the end of the first, well, you're qualifying, just qualifying for it.
Well, I was in tears on both between qualifying for Boston and running Boston. Boston was my 8th year. It was right after... Yeah, it was the day of my 8th year being an amputee. So to celebrate that and finishing the biggest marathon in the world was just amazing. The first marathon, I got hurt. I finished. I was trying to finish the marathon in under 6 hours, but it took me 7 because I got blisters and... it was just, your body's just not used to running like that. So, but I finished and I actually ran a marathon a month before Boston. I ran the Little Rock Marathon that year in March 2014. Mm-hmm. And then a month later I finished, Boston. So.
So is there, are marathons only 26 points? Is it 6 or 26.2?
26.
2 miles.
Funny you say only. Yeah, 26.2 miles.
Oh, I know it only, and I can't even walk 26.2 miles. And no, so I didn't mean that. I mean, does it not go any further? If that's the length of it, I should put it. The length of it is 26.2.
Right, right. So, so yeah, I did the marathons. I'm sprinting. I'm currently in school to instruct, to teach pilots, teach people to learn how to fly. So now I'm a flight instructor. So I go from barely graduating high school to become an amputee, and now I'm about to start teaching pilots. And hopefully in a year from now, I'll be flying for Delta Airlines.
And between, and in between that, going to the Olympics.
Yes. Well, I have trials in June, so I believe I'll make them. But, you know, trials will be a challenge.
And so, there's so many questions I want to ask you, but one of them is, now, did you have that type of, I love the story, or the Little Red Wagon, I think I can, you're going, you know, the Little Red Wagon is trying to get up to the top of the hill and he's not going to give up. So it's, I think I can, I know I can, and then here you are. So, to me, you're my Little Red Wagon. You were not going to give up. You thought you could. You put it into play, and then you said, I know I can.
Right. You know, you talk to my mom. I've been like that since a kid. I was always breaking stuff to put it back together. Sometimes I didn't always accomplish that and I'd get in trouble, but I was always that kid. I wasn't... You know, my aunt told me when I was a kid, she always tells people this story. When I went to visit her in San Diego, I was very young, like 5 or 6. And most kids would run out to the ocean, maybe to their, you know, to the the water would get to their ankles and they would run back, you know, out of fear when you're a little kid. And she said, she turned around, she was talking to my mom, and they looked at me, they looked back, and I'm neck deep in the water, still walking, not even afraid. And they ran and got me. They ran and got me out of there. And she said, at this point, I knew you were different. And I never knew that. She didn't tell me that story until after my accident, after I started back riding, motorcycles again. She said, I knew you was crazy. And I was like, what are you talking about? Well, and then she told me that story. And so I guess I've always had that fearless attitude since I was a kid. I don't know where I got it from, but I've never been afraid.
Well, I think not only not being afraid, but I think it's also about that determination. And as we always say, parents say to their children, you can be whatever you want to be. You can do whatever you want to do if you set your mind to it. And those are empty words if you don't have the fortitude behind it and right. The determination behind it and no fear. You cannot be afraid to succeed. And I think that that's a problem with a lot of the young adults these days. They don't have their ceiling is low. You know, they don't go beyond that. You can do it. You have to stick with it. You have to learn what it takes to get there. And that's what part of what you had to do. Yeah, you had to realize, and I can imagine when you were telling that story of just, you know, standing, getting out of bed and realizing after you fell, oh, my world changed. I don't have a foot.
Right.
And, I can imagine that was a powerful story in my mind as you were telling it. I could just see the reality of it, and that your world came crashing down on that.
Well, you got to look at it like this. It's, you know, the only difference between my disability and other people's disabilities at times are they can hide theirs. I mean, I'm no different than someone who had close family members that died in a car wreck or someone that dealt with something as a kid, some type of adversity. It's just, you can see my adversity on the outside. You don't know who else is, you know, what other people are dealing with. But I'm sure everyone is dealing with some type of disability or some type of adversity that they've overcome. It's just, mine is obvious. You can look and see, okay, he's dealing with that. The other people, you just don't know. So you just assume they're okay. So just made me more empathetic to everyone because you just don't know. Even though you know with me, but even with me, I dealt with a lot mentally to get to where I am. You know, everything changed. You know, I was 25. What do 25-year-olds think about? Money? Girls? You know, how would I approach
the next
girl I dated? How would I approach, you know, how could I tell her that I'm missing a leg? You know, how will she react? And, you know, honestly, the first couple of females I met, when I told them that, they weren't keen on that idea. I didn't hear from them again. So I thought every woman was going to be that way when I told them that. You know, it took a long time to get 100%, get my confidence back 100%, you know.
Well, I think that is a good lesson, and that is something that you have to. You cannot allow the first couple of people who, for whatever reason, could not deal with it. But it's the same challenge that people have for being overweight or too thin.
Right.
You know, we always talk about people being overweight, but people who are too thin have their own insecurities also. Exactly. So everything can be considered a disability. It's just how much are you going to allow that to handicap you? Will you allow this disability to handicap you? And you never did.
Right. And, I mean, I had a great, you know, I had some great friends in my life to be there. I mean, people flew in to see how I was, even after I got home. I had a lot of alone time, unfortunately, because, you know, when you're in the hospital, everyone's there. A lot of people didn't come when I was at home. But eventually, you know, I think they didn't know. I think they just felt like I needed space. But in reality, I don't ask anybody for anything. But in reality, I didn't need them. I needed people. But, you know, I learned a lot on those days and hours of sitting alone in the house and, you know, trying to figure out life.
So. Yes. Well, I think that's always a difficult time. We don't know. And on the other side,
right.
as you just said, yes, you did meet someone. And, yes, you're right. It wasn't that they didn't love you. They really thought they were doing the right thing. And I'm sure looking back on it, you did meet them. But then again, you came out of it so strong. So, obviously, the equation of alone time and together time, it came out right.
Right.
Yeah. Because you did have to deal with an awful lot. And then, too, I think it's like anything else. It's like when you have a disagreement with your significant other, and as we say, it's the elephant in the room. You know you have an issue, you know you want to address it, but how do you delicately do that? And
right.
when your friends, yeah, so when your friends would come to visit, they had to deal with, you knew that they were curious, they wanted to ask a lot of questions, they wanted to, but they didn't want to be, they wanted to be sensitive to where you were. And so it was a big challenge for everybody.
Yeah, it was. But I think as they got to know me, well, they know me. I think they just wanted to make sure when would I be back to normal. And I think once that happened, they know. Because
yeah.
I've always been open to anything, even before the wreck. I would talk about anything that's taboo, anything that's, you know, anything. I love questions. I love talking, so.
Uh-huh. Well, that's true. But then you had to come back because we don't know. They didn't know you were going to come back, the Andre that they knew. They didn't know that.
Right.
They were hoping they would get you back. And thank heavens for your friend who did the research. You know, I know you thank her in silence every day.
Oh,
for
I do.
Being mature.
Oh, I thank her physically,
yeah.
too. She's married, but I've contacted her. And anytime some new triumph happens with aviation, I've still said, hey, this wouldn't have happened without you doing your research, because I'm not sure if I would have
yeah.
looked it up myself or not.
Absolutely. God sends angels all the time.
I agree.
God sends them. And but not only that, you've gone from overcoming that, and now you said you're running a 26.2 marathon. You're a Delta agent. And that's my company, too, as we know. And thank God for Good Delta. They are very supportive to their employees. I really enjoyed my 35 years with them. But you have now going to make us proud. Who's sponsoring you for the Olympics? Are you doing this all on your own?
Currently, Delta Airlines has I'm pretty much one of the athletes. So anytime I do things big like that, they just make sure I get there and get there confirmed and they've been really a good job about supporting. But the other reason why they helped me is because I'm in their group called ABLE, and we reach out to what the ABLE, I can't remember the acronym, but what we do is we pretty much send out circulars to make things easier for not only the agents but the passengers for people with disabilities. And so I kind of
okay.
represent, you know, that group saying, hey, I'm disabled, but I'm doing this, this, and this. And so that group is part of the reason why I ran Boston, because I'm a part of that group. And it was Delta, but it was the group within Delta that sponsored me. So the fact that I'm considered disabled, but I'm kind of looking at disability in the face and saying, hey, you can't stop me from running. I think that's
Absolutely.
Where Delta's been really supportive of that energy that, you know, I'm trying to give. And hopefully can rub off on others, you know, whether it's somebody being a better father, whether it's somebody with both their feet just saying, hey, you know, this guy with one foot is running, I could go running sometime. You know, even if
Absolutely.
It's just a quarter mile, even if it's just a block, you know, you can do it. So.
What, do you work with the children? Do you do anything to help motivate
I'm glad
children?
You said that. Yeah, so it's divided in many sectors, but I'm with a group with my prosthetic company, and I have a social worker that calls me when they have new amputees, and I'll go and talk to them. The other group that I'm with is with the Organization of Black Airline Pilots, Professionals, excuse me, and what we do is it's them and the Milton P. Crenshaw Foundation, and Milton P. Crenshaw was a flight instructor for the Tuskegee Airmen. He just passed away 2 months ago, and we have a group with his name on it and what we're doing is, in Arkansas, is, you know, it's still kind of segregated at times, and what we're trying to do, and the poverty is still pretty huge, and what we're trying to do is reach out to minorities, but all kids, to get them in aviation so they won't just think about sports. They can, and aviation is divided up. You don't have to be a pilot. You can be air traffic control. You can be an engineer. And we want to expose that to the kids, kind of like my mom taking me flying, you know, at 12 years old. We're building the money as me being a flight instructor. I can take these little kids up flying, and they can say, wow, it, you know, it's their first airplane ride in a small plane. Or we get to introduce them to Air Force pilots and take them on the Air Force base and give them tours or tours of the aircraft control center so they can see physically. They can see a black pilot. They can see an air traffic controller, and it gives them ideas of what maybe they want to do in the future.
And I do the same thing. I work with my book, Stars in the Sky, and that's the story of the black unknown pioneers in aviation. And I work with Gigi Coleman, who is the great niece of Betsy Coleman, and she has, it's called the Gigi Coleman All-Stars, and that's exactly what they do. They take the, the Dodo chapter here in Chicago for the Tuskegee Airmen. Certain Saturdays, I think it's like two Saturdays out of the month, they give free rides for the same thing you did, the same thing your mother did, and you know, kudos to your mother to be able to be that advanced and see the opportunity and take her child to exposure, because that's what's happening. I believe that's missing with a lot of the young children today. They're not being exposed. You have to be exposed to make your decision on what you want to do.
Right, I agree.
Yeah, so now do you have any contacts or people who are interested in following you, especially for the Olympics? You know, I'd love to have you back on after you have qualified, because I know that you will. And I'd like to be able to have you back on and kind of give us an account of all the different things you're going through. But is there any way we can follow you, Facebook, or you have a website?
Yeah, you sure can. So I'm Andre Slay on Facebook, and it should be a picture of me running. It's actually my picture, profile picture is a video of me running. I have an athletes page on there as well that you can like. My Instagram name is Andre, A-N-D-R-E, underscore, S-L-A-Y. So I have pictures and everything that's going on. Also, I'm on Twitter, so it's same thing, Dre, it's D-R-E underscore S-L-A-Y. And also I have a GoFundMe, and so what I use the money for is to help with the maintenance of my legs. At first I had it where I needed new legs, and it actually made enough money for me to get a new, because I need a new leg when I started sprinting. That's a whole different leg than the, there's a whole different type of leg than the jogging leg I use for Boston. And so I raised enough money for that. And so now just for maintenance or any type of thing whenever I go, and because I still pay for my own hotel rooms, you know, I pretty much have those, have my GoFundMe up. So if you're interested in donating, it's GoFundMe.com/HelpAndreSlayRun. And that's the GoFundMe account. So, you know, please, you know, if you have any questions, I always answer my Facebook questions immediately. So I'm always, you know, I always enjoy meeting new people and listening to questions or suggestions.
Well, I love it, and I'm going to reprint your information on the Fly Girl page, the Fly Girl Show page, so not a problem to be able to have that. Plus, I'm going to put you on my Facebook because you are such an inspiration, and I think out of all that you're doing, the next thing is that you definitely are going to be a motivational and inspirational speaker throughout the country forever, because that's what you are. You are an inspiration to any of us. That, as I said in the very beginning, if you think you're having a bad day, listen to this story and see how this is a waste of time. What do you worry that you're overweight? Get up and do something about it. If you're thin, do something about it. You know, we can always change where we are to where we want to be, and that's a good story.
And I forgot that you said that as well. I forgot that you said that. Yeah, I eventually got overweight. So when I was again, my frame is really small. I was 160 pounds. I was 230 pounds in 2013, and I almost lost my pilot's license because of high blood pressure because I was so big. So then I lost. I went vegetarian 2 months before I met Jeff to start running. So now at my running weight when I was at Boston, I was 192, and I was lean. So it took work from all areas. It wasn't just me running. I had to eat right, and, you know, I totally understand. And I'm telling you, running's easy compared to trying to eat right. That's the hardest thing I've ever had. You know, I'm from the South. We like to eat, you know. Now I'm going from like to eat to vegetarian. Now I'm the weirdo at all the Labor Day parties. They're like, uh-oh, hide your food. It's Andre because, you know, I'm vegetarian now. So.
Well, why did you go vegetarian? Why didn't you just eat your chicken and your fish?
Because the chicken and the fish still had – it had enough sodium to still offset to make me hold water. And it was still, even though it was considered healthy, it still had stuff I didn't eat. Like I noticed, I started eating chicken breast and green beans first, and my weight still wasn't going down. And my doctor was like, the sodium's making you hold the water. So I started going vegetarian. They didn't put as much sodium in the vegetables. So.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's another show, I tell you. Yeah, that's another show. I have another friend that's what she does, Rhonda Thomas. That's what she does is the nutrition. And it's so much that we don't know. And if we did know, choices would be easier. But that's the point. You know, President Obama's, Mrs. Obama, her movement of Just Move, I think it is. But we have to start. They don't have gym. They don't have all that physical activity in school anymore. And so the problem starts right there. But we all need to move. And you are doing more than moving. You're running and you're sprinting and you're teaching us and your inspiration. You're just such an uplift to everything and such a great inspiration. I tell you, now let me ask you quickly about you. You're going to qualify. When will you take your test, or when will you qualify for or apply for Delta as a pilot?
Well, it's all about flight time, and so currently I'm around 600 hours. Delta usually wants you around 1,500. 1,500 is the minimum to fly a commercial jet. So I'm hoping to instruct for a little while if I get a if I get some type of private jet job to do that until I have the amount of flight time that Delta wants. So I'm thinking this is going to take me about a year or so.
Oh, okay. So a couple of years. Well, in the meantime, that's good, though, because at that point you now have more time to practice to qualify for everything, for the Olympics and then the new instructor job. When would that start?
I'm hoping to take my test at the end of the month, so I'm thinking maybe April I'll be instructing my first student.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to take some lessons. I'm taking lessons through the GG. I'm going to start taking some lessons. I never really wanted to fly. I was a flight attendant, as you know, for 35 years. I loved it. That's where I wanted to be. But we couldn't. There was no one ahead of me to dream about being a pilot. So I never thought about flying. I never really wanted to do that. I enjoyed doing what I was doing, get on and get off, and that was it. But now I'm doing my bucket list things, and one of the things I think I would like to do is to maybe not obtain a pilot's license. It's not that important, but I do want to learn some of the dynamics of it and go through some of the process, and if it just takes forever and a day, that's fine. If I end up with my pilot's license one day, that's fine. I'm not really worried about it, but I just would like to do that. And as you said, overcome your fears. I really have, even though I flew for 35 years, just the thought of being up there in the front and controlling the plane makes my stomach flip a little.
Right. It's definitely different.
So, it definitely is different. And then when you think of a commercial pilot, the responsibility, which I know that in your mind it's only you and that window and all your instruments, and you don't really think about the passengers behind you because you're in control of what's right there. Now, let me ask a quick question, because I'm sure how much of a handicap is it going to be that you don't have the other foot? You have your, you know, prosthetic on, and there's panels or rudders or what do you call them that your foot would control.
The rudders.
But most,
you know, it's not,
or the rudders.
It's the rudders, and you know, it's not that hard at all. I thought it would be, but you know, since I don't have an ankle to push down with my toe, I just move my foot up slightly and then press forward, and yeah, so I don't have any issues.
And the sensation, or is it so much sensation as much as the instruments would tell you how much pressure or whatever, or do you need that real sensation to be, and you do have it in your other leg, but how much of a handicap is that?
Well, again, you feel it in your knee, so I can feel the pressure just like you would feel in your foot. I feel it in my knee.
So it's the right leg, the left leg doesn't do anything?
No, the left leg's totally fine. I have my whole left foot and
As far as controlling the instruments, the rudder, is it only on the right side that you do it? You don't have a rudder on your left side?
Yeah, you have rudders on your left and right foot. Because you push the right rudder. Because the rudder is actually connected to the front wheel of the airplane. So you actually steer the plane with your feet.
Okay. That's a good thing. Thank you for bringing that point in for us that don't know. That's what we really needed to know. Okay. So it's on the ground. And once you're in the air, obviously it's all the instruments. And then when you're landing, of course, that's when it would come back into play.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, I love it. I think I could probably ask you so many more questions, but I want to make sure before we let you go, is there anything that you want to tell us as your parting words for us to be, besides your words of encouragement to those who are going through a difficult time?
Hey, the only excuse you make, the only excuses out there is the ones you make. So you can either sit and, you know, drown in your excuses, or you can get swim and live. And that's what I did. I take that with me every day, and I make no excuses. There's always a chance. You just have to, you know, my situation goes to show, if you do the research and you stay mentally strong, you can pretty much get anywhere you want to get to.
Yes. I love it. I think, well, you are such an inspiration. We just met at the Black History Convention, and you were such an inspiration, and I was so happy that you consented and had the time to be on the show, because I think this type of program or this radio interview, I can play several times a year, just like we all need Sunday mornings to get into our meditation and go to church to get our fuel for the rest of the week. Well, that's what you have been to me since I've met you. And as I say, I love the little red wagon. I think I can, and then you do make it. So we wish you well. I know that you're going to place for the Olympics. I know that my audience would love to follow you, and I'm going to give them all the equipment so that they can, and all the information so that they can follow you, and definitely the GoFundMe. I really want us to know to do that and be a help to you. So once again, if you'll tell us what that GoFundMe was one more time, and slowly, please.
Okay, and that's GoFundMe.com, GoFundMe.com/HelpAndreSlayRun all together.
Well, Andre Slay, we're going to let you run today to end this show, and I'm going to run. And I'm going to run on to and end the show until next week. But I thank you so much for thank you for the interview, Andre.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so honored.
We'll have you back. No problem.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, goodbye. Well, I don't know about you, but I enjoyed that interview. Andre is such a wonderful person, and he is such an inspiration. You just feel his spirit when you're in his presence. And he's an inspiration to those who don't have a physical disability or handicap, however you would like to phrase it. But when you meet him or you listen to his story, and I hope that you will play this over and tell your friends to tune in and listen to this story, because there's no reason for any of us to have a down day. There isn't anything that we cannot do through prayer, through dedication, and the will. So please stay focused and accomplish your dream. This is the Fly Girl Show, and I am on every Wednesday from 11 to 12 Central Standard Time. And my call-in number is 347-857-3609. And I encourage you to tune in, call. Please call me, ask a question, make a comment, or whatever you would like to do. Please feel free to tell your friends. I'd love to have an audience. And if you have any suggestions, please go on the Blog Talk Radio and write a comment. And also, please click the follow button. I have had thousands of people to listen to the show, and it's not being reflected in numbers. So if you do me a favor, after you've listened to the show, please go and find the follow and click it and be one of my followers. I'd appreciate that. So it is time for me to end the show. Have a great, great day. And remember, your blessings are as numerous as the stars in the sky. This is Casey Grant, and I am your host of the Fly Girl Show. And we will see you next week with another inspirational, uplifting, and entertaining show. Have a great day.